Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, are you ready to go?
Yes.
Hey, real quick, did you see the, I saw the, let's see here, the Neri fight, the Xavier Martinez fight, but I didn't see the middle fight, the Danny Roman fight.
We could gloss over those other two fights because
they
were so
weren't that good. Yeah, they weren't
they
that
were
good.
Very, it was a weak undercard. Those were showcase fights.
Did you see Buatsi?
I did. That was very quick.
Did you see the Manuel Char train wreck?
I did not. You saw that?
Yeah.
Was that on the same card?
I caught it on YouTube. It was in Germany somewhere.
What happened there?
Char knocked him out in 2 rounds. The guy was like 302 pounds. I didn't see that. Fucking insane. And then Ty Tomlin versus Tyrone Lucky. That wasn't even televised, but I got the results. So.
That's my phone.
That was your phone?
Yeah. I have the world-class championship wrestling.
I remember that. Yeah, that's what I was like, what?
That's fucking awesome. I just love that.
That's the greatest, man. That's the greatest. All right, let's roll here.
You got to shut this phone off so it doesn't ring.
Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Let me tell you what, I haven't heard that theme in years. I knew as soon as it went off, I recognized it. And I couldn't place it. I thought it was the WWF, like that old WWF, and I remember it was World Class. And it just had that ring. We're talking about Beeb's ringtone here on his phone. Anywho, listen, it's noon. High noon, baby. Get your guns out. And we are live. Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Show, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Joe Habib. And we have a great show for you today. And if you want to call in and ask questions, 323-870-3857. And we'll be here till about 1:30 today. And today we're going to talk about Billy Joe Saunders. He's had surgery on that eye, that injured eye in the Canelo fight. We'll tell you all about it, how bad it was, and all that other good stuff. I'm not a doctor, but it sounded pretty bad, I'm just saying. Also, too, Felix Verdejo enters a plea, and I was kind of surprised by it. But first, we get started with Showtime. The fight's on Showtime. Luis Neri versus Brandon Figueroa for the WBC and WBA regular titles. Brandon Figueroa knocks out Luis Neri in the 7th round. I'm going to tell you this. Before I go any further with this, Chacal, our guy, who knows everything there is to know about Canelo and everything else, he tells me, calls me up Friday and says, I think Figueroa is going to knock him out in the 8th round. And he said, did you see him at the weigh-in? I said, no, I didn't catch it yet. Go watch him at the weigh-in. So I watched the weigh-in, and sure enough, Neri just doesn't look good. He had to weigh in 3.5 hours later because he couldn't make weight. I guess he had officially weigh in 3.5 hours later because he couldn't make weight at all. Weight problems have plagued this guy throughout his entire career, okay? Chacal says, I think he's going to knock him out in the 8th. Chacal's like got a crystal ball over there or something like that, man, because he knocked him out in the 7th round. It was a really good fight while it lasted, but you could tell that Neri was getting tired. He was getting fatigued. He was throwing a lot of body shots. He was landing a lot of body shots. This fight really should have been custom made for Neri. I mean, Figueroa comes in and leads with his face. Both of them do. You know, both Figueroas do. They're all, I mean, they have no defense. It's always a come forward style. It's always a very crowd pleasing style, but they get hit and hit and hit and hit, you know? So, is what it is. 7th round knockout. And ironically enough, I think Luis Neri was he was ahead on 2 of the 3 cards.
He was ahead on my card too by two rounds.
I don't know. I thought he was winning the fight, man. I thought he was winning the fight, yeah. And then I think he just gassed. It looked like, and I tried to go back and I tried to like, and I'm watching the fight. I couldn't see what shot he hit him with.
I saw it.
It looked like a left hook to the liver. Was that the liver shot? It looked like
no,
a left hook.
He hit him. He hit him like right here. Like under the chest, like right in the solar plex region.
Really?
That was the shot
that put him out?
Yeah, it rattled his rib cage, bro. It was legit.
Wow.
It was legit.
Because it looked like it was a delayed reaction, and then as I'm watching it, it looked like he swung a left to the body, and he just, it looked like a delay, and he went down. I don't know. I still,
the replay showed it. The replay showed it because you couldn't see it real time because it's like his arm was blocking it. It was the solar plexus. It hit him right under the chest and the top of the rib cage.
I mean, he looked like he was in pain. I mean, it didn't look like he was gassed. It looked like he was in pain.
Yeah,
there's
so
a big difference, you know.
The thing is this. The punch was a perfectly placed punch. It probably would have taken anyone out.
Yeah.
But you could see in the sixth round, the tide was turning. Without question, he was getting tired. Chakal had told me the same thing he told you, and I said I think the skill gap is just so great in Neri's favor that everything that you're saying would not be a factor. I apologize to all the beating would be subscribers who asked me how to – I told everyone to take Neri by the KO proposition, so I'm going to be a man and tell the truth because that's what I do here.
Beeb, contributing to homelessness.
Well, I mean, look at all the other picks that we got right. We took
you
a bath
the
on
farm,
the
farm. You know, you bet
took
the
a bath
farm
on the,
this guy, and now look.
We took a bath on the Canelo fight, too, because I picked Canelo by decision prop. We lost on that one.
Yeah, I would have thought Canelo by decision, too, so.
Yeah, but we had a couple of good wins before that, so you know, you got to take our licks every now and then. But at the end of the day, I can't determine exactly why what happened. Obviously, it was as a result of what Figueroa did. All credit to him. He was taking the shots. He was getting hit clean, but he was walking through them. He was walking through them like they were like candy.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, he could take a shot. I mean, he could take a shot, man.
So here's the problem. When you have two guys that decide we're going to fight in the phone booth and they're hitting each other at will, and definitely Neri earlier on was landing more shots, and it looked like he was landing the better shots. But here's the thing. He had to exert a lot of energy. And when you're exerting a lot of energy, even though you're hitting the guy clean and he still keeps coming forward at you, you have to take – that much and use that much more energy just to fight that guy off you because he did not stop coming forward. He put a lot of physical pressure on Neri. And even though Neri was still able to hit him as he was coming forward, still was outworking him, Figueroa was every now and then landing a good shot himself. And for whatever reason, whether you want to say that Neri had a hard time making weight, so that affected his punch resistance. It affected his conditioning. It affected the way he was able to deal with the pressure. At the end of the day, Figueroa still had to make weight himself. He's a taller guy, so I'm sure it's not easy for him to make weight. So we got to, you know, extend that same level of courtesy to him. And we he took the shots. So he's the type of guy where he's just a very rugged, strong guy, and he's big for the division, so he may always have that punch resistance. He may always be able to impose his physical size and strength and pressure on guys, and it's up to his opponents to be able to deal with that and fend him off. But nevertheless, I can't say with 100% certainty that the weight, full cause of Neri having the issues dealing with Figueroa as that fight were on. But one thing I can say unequivocally is that sixth round, definitely the tide was changing, and it changed immensely. You could see that regardless if he was up after six, that next six was going to be a tough six for him.
Oh, yeah.
And he possibly would not have been able to fend off Figueroa.
Listen, man, I don't want to hear any weight issues. I don't want to hear any weight issues. He has weight issues constantly.
Yeah.
He's got weight issues constantly. So the fact that he's undefeated. So the fact, listen, if you couldn't cut the weight or you couldn't drop the weight for this fight, because it wasn't like he was overeating. I mean, you've seen him. I mean, the guy's, you know.
He looked emaciated. He did look emaciated.
He
very
really
drawn
did.
He looked bad. He looked bad at the weigh-in. There's no question about it. I'm not going to I can't gloss over that. Whether or not we're going to use that as an excuse, you got to understand. He came from 118 to 122.
Yeah.
So it's like every time he's not big enough to go to 126. He will just would not be able to do it. So at some point we got to figure this out. I mean, I'm sure that's your point. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's
no, it's 100% my point. You know, and if you guys can't get the weight, nutrition, and everything like that to get him to the weight he needs to be,
then
that's
on you. Maybe
you need to call
that's
it a day
you.
Or whatever. I don't know what to tell you because that's the thing. I mean, You have to come in. Listen, the other guy had no problem. You know, I'm sure the other guy struggled.
Anybody
fighting that wave is not walking around at that weight.
Well, just
you
look
know
at,
what I mean?
Look at, yeah, just all you have to do is look at Figueroa's frame. He's got a much bigger frame than Neary. And if he's able to do it, then
right,
you would have to imagine and suspect that Neary could do it too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing I don't want to hear about, you know, because the weight doesn't – the weight factor wouldn't have played a part until later on in the fight, like it did, okay, if you were going to go that route. Neary hit him with some flush, solid shots. I mean real solid shots. And Figueroa didn't go anywhere. Figueroa walked right through everything he had. You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, listen, man, the skill gap was, you know, clearly, like I said, man, I thought the skill gap was there just like you did. But, you know, hey, listen, man, you have to come with the entire package. You know, sometimes skills just don't do it. You got to have the cardio. You got to have the, you know, you got to come in shape. You got to come in, you know. Hey, look, man, there's a lot. And even if you come in with 100%, things still go wrong. You know, like you get hit in the body. That's not, you know, that's not pleasant. So, great win for Figueroa. Stephen Fulton apparently is going to be next for him. I think Stephen Fulton walks him. I think Stephen Fulton is too skilled, but I think Rais Aleem beats everybody.
That's my man at that weight.
That's
class.
My man too. He's the best boxer in the division right now.
But
by
here's
far.
The thing. But here's the thing: when you fight this Figueroa kid, you're gonna have to walk through fire to beat him because he's gonna come with the pressure, he's gonna come with the heat, and you're gonna hit him with everything but the kitchen sink. I think Aleem matches up much better with him than Fulton does because I think Aleem's arguably the hardest puncher in that division, right? In my opinion, I could be wrong, but in my opinion,
I believe Figueroa is a volume guy.
Yeah, he's
I don't
a
believe
guy.
He's a one hitter quitter. I believe he's a volume guy.
Not at all. So that's interesting. The Fulton fight could be interesting, too, because, like I said, Fulton moves a lot. He's not a big hitter. He's going to have to expend a lot of energy.
He's
going
to have to expend a lot of energy. You know, his style, let me tell you what, Fulton's style matches up great with Figueroa's style. But Figueroa's style matched up great with Neary's style, and we saw what happened. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. So at the end of the day,
yeah, man,
you're still going to have to fight this machine off.
And he's not an easy out. I'll tell you that.
No.
He's not an easy out.
Not
but
easy out.
I'll tell you what, how exciting is this division now? I mean, really, like how exciting is this division?
Yeah.
I didn't expect what I saw last night. I thought Neary was going to get him out of there. I mean, Neary's got power. I mean, he's got crazy power.
Yeah.
And now he's out of the picture. So now you got these other three guys, and you got a bunch of guys. That's the division right there.
Yeah.
That's the division. What is Inoue at, 118?
118. Imagine if he goes up there.
Stop it, man. Oh,
forget
man.
Forget about it.
How awesome would that be, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. That would be great, man. All right, there were two more fights on this card. Danny Roman versus Ricardo Espinoza. Roman wins a unanimous decision 98-92 twice and 97-93. Beav, any thoughts on Roman in this fight? I thought it was, you know.
I think, you know, it was like a wash, rinse, repeat. Every round, he was just in total control. I think, you know, him being able to use his footwork and just being able to dictate this fight from the outside, I don't think he was ever in danger of losing. It was, to me, these two fights on the undercard were, they were more along the lines of showcase fights. I thought both guys would win comfortably. I didn't think we'd have any surprises with any upsets on the undercard, to be honest.
No. The only thing I was surprised with was the main event. Xavier Martinez versus Juan Carlos Burgos. Listen, man, a lot of people were really impressed with Martinez. I wasn't really one of them. The scores were 99-91 across the board. I thought Martinez got hit way too much in this fight. And yeah. Burgos, I tell you what, Burgos was right there the whole time, but he's dropping his left hand. He's getting hit. I mean, you know, Burgos was there for the taking. I mean,
Yeah, because his reflexes are totally dulled at this point.
Right.
He's got a lot of, again, with all due respect, guy's a warrior. He's gone through the gauntlet in his career without question. But at this stage, you would have to think that, you know, he's there for the taking against anyone that has, you know, above average talent in this division.
Yeah. With, you and what did he, what did he go to 17-0 last night with 10 knockouts or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of a modest letdown that he did not get the stoppage, because Burgos, you know, has been stopped before. So,
well, and again, man, I mean, Burgos hit him with some good shots too, and yeah. I thought he went to war a little bit more than he needed to, and yeah. still couldn't get this guy out of there. So I don't know. I think Reese Mack in the chat, there was a couple of other people said that Martinez impressed him and stuff like that. I wasn't too keen on that guy, I'll be honest with you.
Not to go off topic here, but here's a fun fact that Ryan Hong just brought to my attention. So Figueroa went from a plus.
I saw plus that. Four, yeah.
Plus 450 to a plus 170 in 3 days.
You know what? They knew something. They knew something.
Well, obviously there was probably some rumblings out there with issues with the weight.
Anytime, I'm gonna tell you right now. Anytime a Mexican is fighting, Chacal seems to know everything about what's going on. You know, he's really juiced in there, man. He really is. But that's a very interesting fact. I saw that earlier on in the chat, from 450 to 170. Yeah. You don't have any idea how much money has to come in to make the line move like that.
Yeah.
You're talking a lot of money.
I think Chacal and his cartel went
Chacal and the cartel, the Zetas, you know.
I think the cartel, Chacal and the cartel went to town on that one. Dropped all the money on there.
Chacal and the rest of MS-13, you know.
Yeah. That's hilarious. That's too funny.
Craziness, man. Craziness. All right, let's move over to the zone. Joshua Buatsi versus Daniel Dos Santos. Buatsi wins via fourth round destruction. Jesus, this right, he hit him with two right hands in that fourth round. And Buatsi, who is he working with? Virgil Hill now? Is that who he's working with? Virgil Hill.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, it's hard to tell if he had any impact on him or not, because the guy he was fighting, I mean, like.
Undefeated. He's undefeated, but again.
Man. I mean, he's nowhere. He was nowhere. You could tell, look, man, we always say there's levels to this, man. You could tell that guy was nowhere near. Nowhere near. Where that guy, where Buatsi was, man.
You know what the funny thing was? I was watching this fight, and I was saying to myself, Buatsi's looking a little stiff and robotic here. He's not really looking fluid. And as soon as I was saying that to myself, he made those two monstrous right hands, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I'm like, when he hit him, it looked like he was going to punch him through the canvas. That's how hard. Like, he came down with such velocity, like those were like incredible right hands he threw.
He looked like the Hulk or something like that.
Boom,
bam.
He came down like this and he's like, boom. And I was like, Jesus Christ, where did that come from? That came out of nowhere.
That guy was dead when he hit the canvas, boy. He was just out, man. He hit him with that right hand. He was out when he hit him with that first right hand. And then he starts falling, and he got hit with another right hand. Like, wow, it was like a torpedo, man. It was boom.
It's like Attack of the Clones when Yoda came in there with the cane like this, and he's looking over at Count Dooku. And automatically, he just throws the cane and goes, and then just jumps at him. That's what this reminded me of, because he was, like, so kind of robotic.
Yeah.
And then, boom, like out of nowhere. I was like, what the fuck is this?
And you know what set it up? And you know what set it up? He bit on that feint. Those feints to the body, because he was hitting him in the body, and he caught him with that feint to the body, and he did it right as he was in the corner. He feinted that body, because you could watch his hands drop. Pow! He just changed levels quick, man. Just boom.
Let me ask you a question and get your opinion on this. So Virgil Hunter said after the fight, during the post-fight interview, he goes, yeah, that's something I asked him to do. We worked at that on the gym, and as soon as he did it, this is what happened. Do you think that was the case, or do you think that was just Monday morning quarterback?
No, I believe it. I believe it too.
I believe it too.
Yeah. No, I do believe that, because you know what? I mean,
Buatsi, I was hoping you were going to disagree with it so I could debate you on it.
No, it had to be. You know why? Because he was doing it all fight. You know, if you notice that he was fainting to the body all night. He really was. And, you know, you watch it over. Because I had to rewind it a couple times. I'm like, all right, now how did he get caught with that, you know? Because I'm watching that knockout again, because just it was vicious, you know? And I'm watching and watching, and I'm like, why did he drop it? There he goes. I said, he's going to the body. Then I watched earlier rounds. I'm like, that's what's going on there.
Virgil Hill gets a lot of stick from a lot of fans because, obviously, he hasn't really had a great deal of success outside of Andre Ward. But remember that fight in the corner when he's like sitting there whispering, he's like, he's ready to be took. He's ready to be took. Like, he sounded like so creepy and shit. Everyone's like, he's ready to be took. Everyone's like, damn, why is he whispering to this guy like this? Fucking creepy, right? And then he got like a lot of stick for that. I was like, you know, weird.
Oh, my gosh. But yeah, Boatsy looked pretty good. Like I said, I think it's time. He's got to step up, though. He's got to step up his competition a little bit. You know what I mean? Because right now, fighting guys like this isn't going to do him any favors. You know, you've kind of exhausted all that, you know, all the favors you could do for yourself. You know what I mean? Because you've got your confidence now. We know you can hit. We know, you know, you've had a lot of experience now. Now it's time for you to step up a little bit. And now we need you to, you know.
Eddie thinks he's ready. He says he should have one more fight. I think it's Virgil Hunter. Virgil Hunter is saying that maybe three more fights. We'll see.
I agree with Hunter. Eddie's going to throw. Yeah, Eddie throws people to the wolves. Eddie doesn't care. Eddie's getting paid either way, son. Eddie doesn't care.
That's true.
See what he's done to fight. Billy Joe Saunders, Kell Brook, you know, throwing people to the wolves, son. That's your boy.
He still gets blamed for that Kell Brook fight.
He should.
With Golovkin.
The guy was 147 pounds. He put him in the lion's den at 160?
That was a bad move.
Stop it.
That was a bad move.
Of course he should get blamed for it.
Nobody
stop Kell from signing the contract. Shut up. Couldn't stop Kell from signing the contract. Oh, he wanted to fight.
That was me. I would have broke his hand so he couldn't sign the contract. That's how one-sided that fight was, in my opinion.
Stop it, man. And I mean, anybody, the level of Kell Brook is going to have success with anybody in the world for a couple of rounds. But again, there's weight classes for a reason, son.
Well, you know, this is the thing that I hate in the sport of boxing. Everyone likes to say, well, this guy will give this guy problems. That guy will give that guy problems. But there's a level of degree of problems. There's modest problems, and then there's catastrophic problems. Sometimes I wake up in the morning, I have problems getting out of bed. But guess what? I'm able to continue on in my day. It's not catastrophic.
Right.
A fight is 12 rounds, okay? You know, these guys are professional fighters. There's no such thing as when you put two guys that are at a high level, there's going to be flawless victory. That's the term that D-Style likes to use, the flawless victory syndrome. When they see a guy lose a round or get hit with a punch, automatically this guy's having
Mortal
problems.
Kombat, yeah.
This guy's having problems. I mean, it's a fight. If you're not having problems, if you're not having problems, then guess what? You're fighting too low of an opposition.
Right.
At some point, you're supposed to have difficulties and problems in there. You know, so... These generalized, simplistic statements that these boxing fans tend to make. It's ridiculous.
All right, let's get to our train wreck of the week this week. It took place in Germany. And Suleiman tweeted us and wanted us to talk about this fight. Because originally I wasn't even going to talk about it because it was such a nonsense fight.
Don't be xenophobic. This guy is the best Lebanese heavyweight fighter in the history of the sport. Lebanese, baby.
Is he
like
Lebanese? Manuel Chang?
He's Lebanese like the bee. Like the bee.
No wonder he's in the train wreck of the week.
Right.
Manuel Char versus Christopher Lovejoy Char, who hasn't fought in, 2 years, but is still somehow considered the WBA regular champion, heavyweight champion, wins by second round KO over 302-pound Christopher Lovejoy. Now, listen to this. Lovejoy was 19-0 with 19 knockouts coming into this fight. I think we know what kind of opposition he was fighting. You know, listen, if that guy can get 19-0, can you imagine what we could go? We could go 27-0, 30-0, 40-0 with the right management, the right team, buddy.
Listen, I got my matchmakers. I'm thinking of making a comeback. I got my matchmakers out there scouting all the middle schools in the city of Revere. I'm going to build up a 30-0 record myself, too.
I would scale that back to maybe like early middle school or elementary because some of those kids are big in middle school, man.
Some of those guys
are getting bigger, man. They're not getting smaller. Tell you that. The high school kids, Jesus, the football players, my God, they're huge now.
That's
all these guys. But you know, so the Char hasn't fought in 2 years. He didn't look that great. Listen, man, the guy was 302 pounds.
Wow.
302. There should be a weight limit. No. The UFC puts 265. That's the weight limit. Because, I mean, you know, come on. This guy wasn't in shape to fight. He looked awful. I don't know how he got 19 bar fights. I don't know. Maybe he was the toughest guy at the barbecue. I don't know. But how in the world he got a title shot? How in the world, man, will Char still has a title to give somebody a title shot? I don't know.
Stop Lebanese people, man. Can't stop us. We'll find a way. We will find a way. We don't quit, man. We're champions regardless. Champions in life. In life.
Champions in life. All right. On UFC TV, Ty Tomlin versus Tyrone Lucky. Friend of the show, Ty Tomlin wins via third round. It was a third round stoppage, basically. They stopped it in between the rounds. So I believe it went down as a fourth round TKO or a fourth round TKO, I believe is what it was called, because all three rounds have been completed. I heard Ty looked really good in this fight, stopped him. The guy he was fighting was a bigger guy, man. He looked, you know, and that guy had a lot of experience. Tyrone Lucky had a lot of experience going in. Tomlin had no problems with him, had absolutely no problems with that guy, which was kind of surprising, I got to be honest with you, because I thought with the amount of experience that guy had, he was going to give Ty a little bit of issues. But that wasn't the case. I mean, Ty went in there and just dismantled that guy. You know, that was on the undercard, that chick undercard or whatever with Heather Hardy and whoever. I don't even know who won those fights because, quite honestly, I just wasn't interested. Babe, do you know who – I think Heather Hardy lost the fight or something like that?
Can I be – she lost, but I have to say one thing, and I'm very disappointed in myself.
Yes.
I should have purchased this card because I heard it was actually good. There was actually people on Twitter. Shout out to Michael Woods. He was saying the card was pretty entertaining, and her fight was very entertaining as well.
Right.
So I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't purchase the event. I actually forgot about it. But see, they have what? Enough with your misogyny.
I was going to purchase it. But, you know, quite frankly, I just forgot about it.
No, because I thought it was on.
Real solid card over there.
No, but I thought it was on.
It was such a good card. We didn't forget about the Nery fight. We didn't forget about that. But this was such a solid card. That we had, we didn't forget. We forgot about it.
Will you let me explain myself, please? I was not aware that it was on UFC Fight Pass. I did not know. I forgot. I think we talked about it. Did we say it was on UFC Fight Pass last week when we had Ty Tomlin on? Because
he wasn't on there. That's the only reason I didn't buy it.
So I
would have bought it. If Ty was fighting on there, I would have bought it. I would have bought it with no problem.
So that's why, like, I'm not used to utilizing UFC Fight Pass. It's not in my rotation of platforms.
Not in your rotation.
I have the zone. I got the zone. I got ESPN Plus. I got Hulu. You know what I mean? I got all these. I got Netflix. I can't keep up with all this stuff. I need help. Lois.
I need help.
Organize these apps for me so I can get reminders, please. Christ. And don't you follow up with anything, please.
I'm just saying, if the card was that good, yeah.
This is totally a mishap on my part.
But it was so dumb. I don't understand. Like I said, I mean, it's UFC Fight Pass, right? Why put an entire girl card on there? You got two other fights. Why not just put the six fights on there? You know what I mean?
I would imagine.
Why not just put the six
fights? One more fight? 15 more minutes, throw off the production. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right? The high production value you guys got going on over there? I mean, come on. I mean, really. You know, I tweeted Lou DiBella after that, after I found out he won, and I tweeted Lou DiBella. I said, are you going to put this guy on TV or what?
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. It was ridiculous.
Good for you.
You got good fighters on the card. You got good fighters, and you're putting this on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Who said this was a good card, by the way?
Michael Woods, Sulam Urbina, she's a girl that we interviewed before. Why do you have to always be so condescending?
Condescending means to talk down to somebody, Beef. Listen,
exactly, you're diminishing these people's opinions. Saluma Bean is a high-level female fighter. Michael Woods has been in the boxing He's been in the boxing journalism field.
Is she the one that posts in bathing suits and stuff on Instagram? Is that the same one?
No, come on. Why do you have to always...
I'm asking questions. I don't know because I don't know.
You and your sexploitation. I'm getting tired of it.
What are you talking about?
Okay, maybe she has one or two with a bikini on. Can't she go on vacation?
In her living room? I don't...
It was on the beach.
I didn't see
it. Was on the beach.
I'm asking questions.
She went to the beach.
More about women's boxing. I'm trying to immerse myself in women's boxing, and you're just making fun of me for it. That's what I don't understand. Like, I try to get involved in this stuff, and you're just like, you're just hating on me. I don't get it.
Okay, she has some photos of her in a bikini at a beach, which is totally acceptable. Now, she's in her, if someone's lying on a bed with their a bikini on, that's a little bit suggestive, you know, whatever. To each his own, but I'm just saying. But when you're on a beach, it's totally, totally acceptable and normal to wear a bikini. So let's just put that out there. I don't want to hear any comments from the peanut gallery on that one.
I'm just saying, man. I'm just
goodness
saying.
For goodness sake here.
Michael Woods and this other girl said that it was
a couple other fans that I don't want to dox people's stories, but you know, a couple other fans said it was good as well.
Yeah, is that right? Is that right?
Again.
What was the over-under on people watching that card? Like 15, 20? Who do you think got more views, the Clarissa Shields pay-per-view or this one?
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sure it was a good pay-per-view, man. I'm sorry. It would have been better with Ty Tomlin on it, though, right? Would have been better?
Oh, I agree.
Would have been better. What is Luke DiBella doing, man? Put him on there. What are you doing? You got a new guy, and you're not even using him. Hurry up, man.
You just signed the guy. You would think the plan would be to showcase him a bit, right?
You know, I mean, right? I mean, you got a pay-per-view right there. I mean, there it is. Your big chance, and you blew it. You blew it.
Right.
Come on, DiBella. Right. Get with the program here, man. What are you doing? All right, let's talk about the upcoming fights here. May 22nd in Las Vegas on ESPN, ESPN Plus. We have Jose Ramirez versus Josh Taylor, 12 rounds for Ramirez's WBC and WBO titles and Josh Taylor's WBA and IBF titles. Steve, let's stick here for a minute here. This is for Undisputed, son. This is big.
This could arguably be the best fight of the year. Obviously, it's probably not going to get the attention it deserves. And we're not going to go down that road and talk about the horrible promotion because it's already been said and done.
But, terrible promotion. As big as this fight is, are you serious?
Yeah, it's a great fight.
And we have Goose Egg. 0.0 promotion for this fight. It has been the drizzling, you know what?
Yeah, it's
promotion
very,
for this fight has sucked.
Very, very disappointing, to say the least.
Awful.
Very, very disappointing, to say the least.
Awful. For the Undisputed Championship, man, all the marbles on the line, all the belts, every belt in that division, and nothing. I think it's going to be an awesome fight, though. I don't know who to pick. I'm picking Josh Taylor. Could really go either way, though. I'll be honest, man. I like Josh Taylor a lot. Rode with him a lot as far as on his other fights, Regis Prograis and everything like that. I thought he won that fight. I thought it was narrow, but I thought he won.
I'll tell you.
It's a coin flip. It really is. I like Josh Taylor, but again, man,
I'll tell you something that I saw in that Prograis fight that really opened my eyes. And Josh Taylor is definitely a good fighter. He can fight at range. I don't think he's a great inside fighter, but he's capable on the inside. He can go to the body, but I don't think he's good on the inside defensively. I think he stands a little too tall up, gives you too much of his body, squares up a little bit on the inside. And I don't always think he tucks his chin. I think both of these guys are not defensive specialists by no means. But the one thing I do like about Ramirez is he does tuck his chin. does get low up and underneath shots, and he rolls shots very well. I don't think Josh Taylor does that, but it was a little bit startling to me in that Prograis fight when Prograis went in there in deep in the pocket with Josh Taylor, and he outfought him on the inside in spots in that fight.
Oh, yeah, for sure he did.
And that was an eye-opener because I would have thought he would have been more of an ambush guy in that fight, in and out, blah-blah-blah-blah, in and out, blah-blah-blah-blah. But he stood in that pocket, and he fought, and I thought outfought and outworked in spots the bigger, stronger guy that you would think he would not be able to do. So I thought the movement would be the problem for Taylor in that fight, but it was more or less the volume and the real fluid punching and combination punching on the inside and just the grittiness that Prograis showed in that fight. I see Ramirez always finding a way inside against everybody. And once he's in there, he's really hard to deal with. So I think his grittiness and the way he's able to be a grinder on the inside and just how tough he is, plus he's on his home turf here. I think that Ramirez is going to outwork Taylor. And I think Taylor may get stopped late in this fight.
Wow.
I think he's going to get worn down in this fight. I think just the sheer volume that Ramirez is going to bring, the pressure, and his pinpoint accuracy with that body punching, I think it's going to be a problem. I think the inside game of Ramirez is going to give Josh Taylor a ton of issues in this fight, and that's what I believe is going to actually win him the fight. So I'm going to go with Ramirez in this fight, maybe 10th or 11th. I'm going to say 11th round stoppage for Ramirez in this fight.
I think Josh Taylor is going to win this with a very, very close decision. I really do. I think that, skill-wise, man, both guys are really good. I think Josh Taylor has just got a little bit more boxing ability. I think he's a better boxer.
He's better on the outside. He's sure. a little more versatile.
I think what I'm waiting for is to see how he handles that pressure.
Yeah.
That's what I'm waiting for because he had to learn something from that Prograis fight, and Prograis got on the inside on him and everything like that.
You noticed that too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think he's got to learn something from that Prograis fight. I think you're going to see a better version of Josh Taylor. I mean, every fight he's got to get better, right? I mean, you got to learn something from every fight. I mean, you would hope anyway. This is a good fight, though. I mean, it really is. There's no two ways about it. This is a really top-notch fight that's not being promoted at all. So there you go.
It's horrible.
Awful. Awful. On the undercard here, Jose Zepeda versus Hank Lundy. How big of a star could
you say
Hank
this all
Lundy
the time?
Oh,
you
my
say it all
God.
The time. You know what? I cannot put up a good argument against what you're saying here.
Drives me nuts. It just absolutely drives me nuts. Yeah. All you have to do is put a microphone in his hand and let him go. That's it.
I love the guy.
He is a complete does your job for you.
I love the guy.
He's awesome. The nicest guy on the planet. He's a super nice, the nicest guy on the planet.
He's so funny.
He's
just
awesome, man.
He's just witty. He's very witty and he's funny and he's just a real engaging person. He draws you to him, like he's a captivating type person. It's hard to not like the guy.
You could hate Hank Lundy from the outside and talk to him for 5 minutes and it's like you've known him forever. He's one of those guys. You know what I mean? He's seriously one of those guys. So Jose Zepeda and Hank Lundy. I hope Hank Lundy wins. I don't know that he does, but I really do hope he wins. Let's see here. Elvis Rodriguez versus Kenneth Sims, 8 rounds junior welterweights. Robeson Ramirez on that undercard versus Juan Tapia, 8 rounds featherweights. Now, he's put a win streak together since his first loss, his debut loss, I think it was. So there you go. There's the ESPN card. Not a bad card. Not a great card. Not a bad card. Obviously, main event is good. But not a bad card. Let's see here. That's May 22nd. That's it. May 29th, a week later, on DAZN, Devin Haney's fighting Jorge Linares for Haney's WBC lightweight title. And was it you that made reference to this that said that the only time Haney is interested in fighting Teofimo is when he's got another fight?
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, I mean, every time both guys have fights signed, so conveniently Haney will tweet out, "I'd love to fight Lopez next." And he did the same thing with Lomachenko when Lomachenko had the title. And it's just it's just getting ridiculous at this point. It's, you know, we all know what you're doing. It's clout chasing at its finest.
Right.
Let's call it for what it is. With all due respect to Haney, I'm not here to, you know, I don't care if he makes $300 million. He deserves it. He's a fighter. He's taking the punches. But at the end of the day, stop with the false narratives. We all know that you're not going to fight Lopez next. We all know that you probably don't want to fight Lopez next when a fight is going to be presented to you where you're going to get $2.5-3 million to fight someone along the lines of Jorge Linares. So it is what it is. Let's not pretend. You know, I know you want to promote yourself. That's great, but at some point, this is becoming redundant, and it's becoming just becoming irritating, to be honest with you, that you hear the guy say the same thing over and over again when you know it's sort of like Eddie Hearn, what he's doing right now. But we'll get into that. But
right.
It just becomes ridiculous at some point. You know.
You know, what do you do? I mean, if you're let's see here. Give me 1 second here. Let me pull this up here. Go down to Teofimo. Okay, so Teofimo is the champion in all the weights. You got Devin Haney. You got Ryan Garcia, both on DAZN. Gervonta Davis for the PBC. And at Top Rank, we got George Kambosos. Vasily Lomachenko.
Fight Nakatani next. I love that fight. In June.
Yeah, damn, man, that's a good fight. That's a sick fight. You know, but if you're Lopez, what do you do here? Because it seems like all the big guys are on the other side. All the big money fights are on the other side of the street. Yeah. Wow.
No
could
brainer.
You imagine? Okay. So whoever wins that fight, Lopez moves up. Top Rank promotes that. There you go.
If Aram does not petition for him to fight the winner of Ramirez versus Taylor, then he's a very vindictive person. Really is.
Yeah.
He would have to be, because that's a can't miss.
No.
A can't miss.
And man, is that a fight. Wow.
Right? And that'll be for all the marbles. And then if Aram's smart, he's going to be saying to himself, yeah, these other guys may not want to fight him, but they have no choice now. Because it's like what Brad Hopkins said to me many years ago when I interviewed him, you know, at 160, I had no choice but to unify and get all four belts. It was the only way I can get guys to fight me, because all roads led to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to have to be the situation with Lopez, because these guys, Devin Haney has absolutely no interest in fighting Teofimo Lopez. And, you know, neither does Ryan Garcia. So let's just be honest about it. Behavior is proof, right?
Yeah. Listen, Ryan Garcia is not going to fight him. Devin Haney's
not going to fight him.
Doesn't seem like he wants to fight him. You can call out his name all you want, but listen, you either want to fight or you don't want to fight. You know,
and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. Behavior is proof. Behavior is proof.
And not to mention, you know, not for nothing, he does have fights left on that Top Rank contract. How many? I don't know. But this thriller, I don't know if the fight with Kambosos counts with that Top Rank contract. I don't know. But I know he wants out of Top Rank. So the only way to get out of it is to keep fighting Top Rank guys. So it is
what
it is.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Don't get out of it before you get that Ramirez-Josh Taylor winner. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow, right?
That would be a smart move.
Shout out to D-Style. Thank you so much, brother. He says, y'all caught me off guard with the time. He said, shout out to Ringside Reporter Podcast. Yeah, so now that summer's coming, there'll be a couple of days during the summer, maybe one or two times during the summer, we'll have a noon show, or we may have to go Monday or something like that.
Yeah.
Just wait, you know, not very often, just one or two days here and there, just with the summer, with vacations and everything like that. Because, you know, the lavish lifestyle I lead, you know, listen,
At Beeb Industries, we negotiated your contract where you have some leeway in when these shows are going to happen. So
absolutely, which I appreciate. I love talking to the boss over at Beeb Industries. He's great.
That was part of the benefits package that we alluded to you. So
absolutely, and I think in a couple more shows we're going to have to renegotiate my contract. I think there's a lot of
stipulations
and everything I want to put in there. Please,
we're going to give you some stipends. We already have that.
We already have that. Taylor M says, I can see the fear of the pie challenge in Eric's eyes. We had a pie bet last week. I don't know what it was for, though. What was the pie bet for? Do you remember? I don't even remember what it was.
I'm going to make a pie bet with the whole entire chat. that Joshua Fury does not happen this year.
He's still on that. Noon show should go to first bid. That's right. We got FC Cincinnati playing today, man. We got them playing at 4. I got season tickets heading down, man.
Gotta get your soccer game in.
Gotta get the soccer in, man. There you go. All right, let's talk about the news and rumors here. The Canelo aftermath, man. Let's talk about this, man. Billy Joe Saunders suffered a fractured orbital in that fight, which they kind of knew right away. What was it, broken in 3 or 4 places or something crazy? I mean, just shattered. I mean, it's just, what a mess, you know? He's probably got that steel thing on his eye, like that one comic book hero or whatever, you know? I don't know.
Looks like, he looks like Cyborg.
Yeah,
actually.
That's what it, yeah.
Or Kano from Mortal Kombat.
That's it. It was Kano. That's the one he had, that metal face or whatever, like half a metal face or whatever, you know? Yeah, not good, man. Not good, man. He busted his face, man. Like, literally broke his face.
He got jacked up, bro.
Jeez. That's a rough way to go, man. After all that stuff, you know, and the thing is, like, the worst part of it was he got on Daniel Dubois for quitting. He got on all these guys for quitting and stuff like that. And, you know, listen, man, it's the referee didn't stop the fight. You know, your corner or you or your corner stopped the fight. All I know is that when the fight was stopped, I didn't see, you know, a whole lot of, hey, no, don't do that. I'm a lot of protests going on. And listen, I don't care. Because I know I ain't coming out if I got hit with that shot, son. You know, I know I'm not coming out. So, listen, man, but it's tough to criticize people and then get the same thing done to you and then you do the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's a rough way to go, man. So
yeah.
I don't think nobody really blames him for doing what he did. I think they blame him for all the trash you talked about the other fighters who got the same thing done to them, and they, you know, they did the same thing. So, what did you say that Dubois had a orbital? He had a fractured orbital in the Joe Joyce fight.
Dubois had a double fracture, but he also had retinal bleeding. So, he was told by two medical professionals that if he did not stop when he did, that he could have he would have had possibly double vision for the rest of his life. Double vision in that eye for the rest of his life. You know what they also said? They said that because the bone was broken, the fragments were going around, he could have had permanent nerve damage due to the bone fragments damaging the nerves.
Mm-hmm.
And also they said his eye could have fallen back into the sinus cavity of his face. And that would have been extremely problematic. Because the bone is holding the eye in place, and obviously if the bone's not there to hold the eye in place, that eye can go anywhere. You could tear, that's a recipe for a torn retina right there, because your eye's going to be being pulled.
Oh,
so the retina's in the back of your eye, and if your eye's being pulled and pulled and moved in directions where it's going to cause friction in the back of your eye where it could tear, you're going to tear your retina. So yeah, retinal bleeding. So Dubois was just as bad as Billy Joe Saunders, if you think about it, because he suffered his injury in the third round, and he continued to fight for 7 more rounds after that. So people are totally diminishing the courage that he showed for going on that additional 7 rounds with that injury.
Well, that's what I've been saying this whole time, and I get really kind of irritated with you sometimes when you say that Dubois quit that fight. You know, because I'm like, wait a minute, dude. I was like, you can't say that kind of stuff, Beeb. I mean, you just can't.
Thank God for the internet. Thank God for the internet, because I'm going to make a montage of video clips what you said about Dubois.
I didn't say anything about him. I bet on him. I bet on him to win.
And yeah, that's why you're so salty.
You know?
The public knows what you did.
But sitting here listening to you, it's just, you know, when you kept saying that stuff, it kind of made my stomach turn. You know, I'm like, and I talked to you about it offline numerous times.
It's funny, I shouldn't say, you use the word funny. You know what's disturbing to me is I tweeted out to Teddy Atlas. I asked him a question because him and Ken Rideout always talk about, oh, fighters back in the day did this, fighters back in the day did that, you know, this and that and the third. You know, everybody wants to use their nostalgic comparisons and whatever. Back in the day, we didn't even have planes. I know we want to go back in the day and make a back in the day argument. We didn't have planes back in the day, and we used horse and buggy. We didn't have cell phones. We used carrier pigeons to talk to each other. So does that mean we're not going to move on and progress as time goes on? Just because things were done doesn't mean that they were the right thing to do. You ask anybody, is it worth losing vision in one eye to go out on your shield? I think maybe at the time they'll say no, but 10 years later, after having to go through life with not being blind in one eye, they'll probably have a different outlook on that. So I asked Teddy Atlas, because he's sitting there, him and Ken Rideout on their show. Oh, well, we don't even know if the eye's broke. We don't even know. We need to see an X-ray. So Billy Joe Saunders needs to validate his position to you, who is not taking a punch, who's not in there fighting. You were the same guy that said you were an amateur fighter at one point, but you had to stop because you had a back injury. So you quit then. If he quit, you quit. You didn't
go
on with your
herniated disc in his back. He could barely walk, Beeb.
Well, I want to see the medical reports. Like, he wants to see the medical reports.
His dad's a doctor. Dr.
Okay.
Atlas?
So
have you heard of him?
No, but
big-time doctor.
Here's the point I have. Hold other people to the same standard you would hold for yourself. Then the argument is, well, I'm not a professional fighter. That's fine. So put yourself in a stressful situation, okay, where you're laying it all on the line. It doesn't have to be physical. It could be mental. It could be financial. Everyone takes the path of least resistance, okay? Everyone does. Not everyone. Most people do. So just because these guys are fighters doesn't mean they're human beings. There's systems in place to save them from situations like this. The name of the sport is boxing. It's not beat each other till they go blind. It's not beat each other till we get a friggin' brain injury, okay? At what point do we just say stop? There's got to be a level that we don't go beyond here, in my opinion. So I get sick of people like Teddy Atlas and Ken Rideout and all these other weekend warriors that have all this criticism and use terms like behave like a fighter. What does that actually mean, behave like a fighter? So we have to suffer serious injuries to pacify you, to get your approval that we're tough, that we're macho. At some point, you know, it becomes stupidity. It's not bravery anymore. It's stupidity. And that's it. That's my rant for the day.
Well, I'm going to take umbrage with it because I tell you what, I don't think you should be disrespecting Teddy Atlas.
I don't like the guy.
Well, that's not right.
And as much as I don't like him,
you know what?
So
and he's got
back.
The nicest things to say about you, too. Every time I talk to Teddy, he always asks about you, how you're doing and stuff like that. And you just take a dump on him every chance you get.
I asked him a question on Twitter. You know what I said to him? I don't know if you saw the tweet. I said, Teddy Atlas.
I don't. I blocked you on Twitter.
I said, what if you were training your son and you were in your son's corner and your son suffered the same injury Billy Joe Saunders suffered? All right? And you looked at that, and you were fearful that possibly if he continued, he'd have irreparable damage to that eye, possible blindness. What would you have done there? I never got an answer.
Because I don't think Teddy Atlas has a son.
Yeah, he does.
Does he?
Yeah, his son actually works for the Raiders.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
yeah.
So Chandler M. That's what we bet. Pie bet on Kambosos upsetting Lopez. Yeah, he thinks – so Chandler took Kambosos over Lopez. That's what we bet. Yeah, dude, you're losing that. Are you kidding me? He thinks Kambosos is going to win? Dude, that's the easiest pie bet I've ever made.
Oh, my God.
Come on, stop it. You should have told me I took Kambosos or something like that. Wow. Yeah,
well, you forgot about
that
bet?
Bad one.
How could you forget about that bet?
Well, no, I didn't remember what fight it was.
Oh, okay.
I knew we made a bet, but I was like – and I knew it was a ridiculous bet, And but I just couldn't remember, you know, because it was just so ridiculous. It just kind of escaped my memory because I'm like, nobody would, nobody in their right mind would bet on that fight. And we found a taker. How about that?
That would rival Buster Douglas upsetting Mike Tyson if that were to happen. That would rival that.
That would rival you beating Mike Tyson, right? That ain't going to happen. I mean,
that would.
You know, both
that
of,
would.
You know.
That
on,
definitely
man.
Would.
That's crazy. That's crazy talk. That's crazy talk. Your boy, the O.J. Simpson of boxing, Felix Verdejo, entered a plea this week of not guilty. What? Dude, what on earth are you guys planning to argue over there? Got your car at the scene. I'm sure they got DNA. I'm sure they got the chick's DNA. They got shell casings from the gun that you shot at her with. You got a witness, an eyewitness who was there, rolled over on you. Son.
Doesn't look good at all.
Son.
I don't even
know. Come on, son.
I have no words for this.
Dude.
But I'm hearing so many different stories, and I don't know what to believe, but the evidence just looks insurmountable here.
It's like the O.J. case. I mean, but, you know, he ain't got like a whole battery of lawyers on his side either.
No.
He can't afford that. He ain't got O.J. money. You crazy?
He's facing the death penalty, too.
Yeah.
That's some death
penalty. Yeah, serious. Man.
Some serious repercussions.
Yeah, he's in some big trouble. And I wonder if the guy whoever rolled over on him, my guess is they're going to see quite a bit of jail time, and they may have rolled over and said, hey, we're not going to give you the death penalty. We're not going to seek the death penalty if you cooperate or whatever the case may be.
It's not a good
thing. I don't know. I don't know what the they had a needle. Yeah, they did. Reese Mack said they had a needle to knock her. Yeah, I don't know if they have that in evidence, but they found like he injected her with a combination of heroin and fentanyl to get her to go down. I guess he punched her and then injected her with the heroin and the fentanyl to get her to stay asleep or whatever, and then they dumped her off the bridge. And then, you know, she was still alive when she hit the water. They were shooting at her. They got the casings from the shells on the bridge, right? But she ended up suffocating, I mean, drowning, because she can't, you know, she's, you know, incapacitated, can't do anything. So
that's insanity.
Just insane, right? And Dan was telling me that's what he was watching the Spanish channels, and he said that's what they think is going to happen, because they were talking about CTE and that kind of thing. I think that's what they're going to try to go for, is that CTE defense, you know, where he's been hitting the head a couple of times, you know, and you know he wasn't in his right mind. They're going to do scans and all that other stuff. Listen, man. For somebody who has CTE, that was awful planned out. The fact that you went and got somebody else, and they rolled with you. They rolled with you to go do whatever you were going to do. I mean, it didn't question it. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man.
It's a bad look for me.
Yeah, it's not good. JC says, yeah, they're trying to go that route. Yeah. So I got some sad news here. The Olympic boxing team, from what I've read, is sending 6 people to the Olympics. Our boxing team will consist of 4 women and 2 men. What did the 84 team who won like 8 golds or something like that? Something ridiculous. Yeah. When was the last time? When was the last gold medal winner we had? Is that David Reed?
I'm trying to remember. Was it Andre Ward? I can't even remember, bro.
I don't remember.
Let's
take a look real quick. Hold on, let me see.
Last male boxer to win a gold medal. I think it was Ward. Last male American boxer to win a gold medal. Andre Ward. Yeah.
Was it Andre Ward? When did he win one?
2008. No, was it 2008 or 2000? Yeah, it was 2008.
2008?
Yeah.
Wow.
2008.
That's just insane, man. So since 2008, we haven't had one since 2008. That's what amazing, isn't it? Our best chance is, I don't know what weight she fights at, but there's an Olympic female boxer who's got a real good chance of winning a gold medal. And I know, I mean, I'm talking about male boxers. I know Clarissa Shields won, but their division, I got to be honest, man, their divisions aren't that deep.
They're not as deep as
the men's at all. So, and listen, you go there and you win, you won a gold medal. I don't take that away from you. But, you know, listen, man, we're talking about the men's boxing team. Who, when you think about that 84 team and then that 78 team, what? What is going on, man?
Well, here's
76, I'm sorry, 76 team.
Here's some things that I've heard. So a lot of these fighters that were considering going into the Olympics because of COVID and the layoff and all this and that, they were concerned that if they didn't go pro now, then careers would be put on hold, so to speak. So they tried to go pro, and they weren't sure that the Olympics was even going to happen because of COVID, so they didn't want to wait around with the hope that the Olympics was going to happen. So that was one reason that was floated that I heard. Also, I was told by someone in the know that these aren't the final numbers, that there may be a chance that we may get more boxers to go. It's not finalized yet. This is what I was told. I'm not sure if this is correct information or not, but this is something that I was told.
I hope so. I mean, yeah. So
that's the thing. So because of COVID, a lot of fighters decided to go pro because they weren't even sure that they'd be able to go to the Olympics.
It's insane. Just insane. Just sad. Said,
yeah.
Chandler M says, can we talk about Clarissa Shield trying to defend the joke of a champion, Andrade? I love you guys, but did he avoid the tough questions when Beeb interviewed him? I don't think he did. I think that
I don't think he avoided the questions. I didn't think he answered them the questions in a favorable way to himself, in my opinion, but that's totally subjective.
Because he was talking about money with the Charlo fight and everything like that. I think his big qualm with that was like the money, that neither one of them were really getting paid anything. And I get it, and he wants to
I remember the whole scenario. They were originally going to give him $200,000, but then they bumped it up to $300,000. They were originally going to give him $250,000, then they bumped it up to $300,000. And this was back in 2014 when he just won the title, not too long after he won the title. And he turned down $300,000 to defend his title against Jermell Charlo. And Jermell Charlo was very upset that he turned it down because that would have been his first title shot. So, you know, that's why the Charlos have such disdain for Andre to this day, I suspect, because he froze Jermell out of a title shot back in 2014, which would have been his first title shot at the time.
Yeah. You know, yeah, so if you guys don't know, Beeb interviewed Demetrius Andrade a couple of days ago. Go check it out. If you haven't seen it, it's on our YouTube channel, wingsidereporterlive.com. Go check it out. Great interview. It's about 20 minutes long, 20, 25 minutes. It's great. He dropped a lot of tidbits and everything like that. So, guys, definitely go check it out. It was a really good interview.
Then when he was asked about David Benavidez, he started saying, well, you know, David Benavidez is a real fighter, so I got to get paid real money. You know, then he's like, well, you know, I mean, we could do that, but they have to guarantee me a shot at Canelo if I were to beat him. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, well,
they can't really do that though, can they? Because they're not, not the same, you know what I'm saying? Two different promoters.
But here's the thing, Eric, and I mentioned this in the interview. So I gave him every opportunity to answer the questions in a more favorable way to himself. Why would you not want to fight David Benavidez if he's ranked number one by the WBC? Because if you beat him, you take the number one spot. So why would you not want to do that? Why would you not want to take the guy's number one spot?
Yeah,
that's my question. So why like it would be close to inevitable and almost impossible for you not to get the shot unless the WBC decides we're going to have to make the number five guy the mandatory like they did with Brazil in the Wilder situation. But I don't think they would have done that in this case. I don't think they, and then he's like, well, they're on the other side of the street. You know, we could do better business with Top Rank. Eddie's done business with Top Rank before. Yes, but Eddie's also done business with PBC as well. Eddie does business with everybody. Eddie's never had a problem working. I mean, he did Joshua versus Ruiz. That's a PBC fighter. You know what I mean? So, the way he answered the questions really just did not make sense. I think the guy needs a PR coach, to be perfectly honest with you, with all due respect.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, a lot of the stuff he was saying was, you had brought out this fact, and I don't know, I'll be honest with you, I didn't do the research on it. Didn't you say he's never fought a world champion?
He has never beat a world champion in his career, but he's also never fought anyone who ever held a world title in their career.
Didn't Marta Rosen hold that title?
No, that was for a vacant title. He's never the champion.
But I thought I thought Marta Rosen held the title at one point. I don't know.
Let me double check. I'm wrong. No.
No, we're looking at Continental. Yeah, we're looking at Continental and stuff like that.
Vadas Monerosian is an American professional boxer. He has challenged twice for a light middleweight title in 2013 and 2016, and once for a unified world title in 2018. He's lost every single one of those challenges. He never became a champion. No?
All right. So when he won the title, when Andre won the title, let's see here.
Two vacant fights.
Right.
To his credit, he was supposed to fight Saunders before Saunders popped positive for that stimulant, but when Saunders got stripped, he ended up fighting Saunders for another guy for the vacant title.
You know, Vadas Monerosian might be the biggest name on his resume. I mean,
it most certainly is. And this is a guy that got knocked out in two rounds, with all due respect, by Gennady Golovkin.
So when he won, he won it against Walter Kandakwa. That was the one. It was vacant. It was in Boston or whatever.
He was the sub.
Yeah. So he won that. After that, his next fight was against Artur Akavov, Maciej Sulecki, Luke Keeler, and Liam Williams. That's not exactly a murderer's row right there. I got to be honest, man.
He has never fought a current or former world champion.
Somebody's saying Jack Coquet was a titleist.
Let's find out.
Let's find out here.
If I'm wrong, I will stand corrected.
Yeah, he had the WBO International. Nope.
He's not a titleist.
Wait a second. Yeah, he lost that fight.
Yeah, he's not. He's never a world titleist, no.
He was an interim, WBA interim world super welterweight title. He was just an interim. He wasn't a full-blown champion. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I always say, like, if you get the belt, you're a champion. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well, he's a titleist. I think he's a world titleist. I wouldn't consider him – well, I guess you could – yeah, technically he's a champion, but I would consider him more along the lines of a titleist or a belt holder, to be perfectly honest with you. Because he was never ever thought to be the man in the division.
Right.
Like, when he was at 154 –
we knew he wasn't going to beat Andre, put it that way.
You still had Canelo out there. You still had, and you know, and to his point, Canelo did move up, and he did have the only title that Canelo would have needed to unify. That's a fair point on his part.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, you've never beat a world champion in your life.
I mean, who's his resume? I mean, Canelo says, you know, you haven't fought anybody, but listen, I recognize names on his resume, but again, they're not murderer's row here. I mean, you compare this with anybody else. I mean, it's not, you know.
The biggest name on his resume is Vadas Monerosian.
Hey, I would go along with that for sure. You know, and listen, I mean, that's not to say that he's not a good fighter. He's a great fighter. I mean, listen, you don't get that many wins and that many, you know, he's a good fighter. He's a really good fighter.
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say, to be fair, I mean, you can't say that he wouldn't do any worse than Billy Joe Saunders did, right?
No. No, I don't think so. I mean, but it's tough because it's a tough sell. That's a tough selling fight. Billy Joe Saunders, but if you put him in there with Canelo, Canelo's going to sell anything. So I don't know. I keep going back and forth on it. I'd rather see Canelo fight one of the Charlos. I'd rather see Canelo fight Benavidez or Caleb Plant. Caleb Plant's the one I want to see next. I think that's a good fight. I think that Caleb Plant gives him problems at times, but I don't think Caleb Plant. I think it's going to be That's going to be an uphill climb for Caleb Plant.
I don't think Caleb Plant wins the fight, but still got to fight the fights.
Stranger
right?
thing. Hey, listen, I didn't think Nery was going to lose this weekend. So there you go.
Yeah, you still got to fight the fights.
And speaking of the guy that Beeb just slanders over and over on every podcast, Daniel Dubois. He dropped trainer Mark Tibbs and picked up Shane McGuigan. Can Dubois be fixed? I'll be honest with you. I mean, how many fights has he got now?
I'm going to have to see him come back from the injury because, again, everyone that has suffered that injury never came back and became champion. Like, what has Brooke done after he suffered that injury? He got knocked out again, suffered another injury,
yeah.
And he got the other side of his face busted up. So
yeah.
I've just never seen anyone come back from that injury and be a better fighter afterward, or even the same as what they once were.
No.
I think Golovkin ruined Kell Brook, and we could argue that possibly Joe Joyce may have ruined Daniel Dubois. I hope I'm 100% wrong because I like Daniel Dubois. I thought he had a lot of potential beforehand before that injury. But let's see. Billy Joe Saunders, I think, is done. There's no way he can come back. In my opinion, I could be wrong. But
I hope he's done. Listen, he's fought. He's had a good career. He's fought a lot of people. He's held the titles and everything like that. Done everything you could possibly want and fought the big fight. You know. I like Billy Joe Saunders. I don't want to see him get hurt. I don't want to see him, you know what I mean? You've had this kind of injury. There's no – I know you want to come back. I get it. I get the – but there's no real reason to. I mean, what are you going to come back and prove? You're not going to fight Canelo again. You know what I mean? That fight's not going to take place again. So, you know. And SB in the chat says Ray Leonard came back from a detached retina. I get it, but, you know, he came back and then he fought who? Hagler, which was a billion-dollar fight, you know. So, but who's Billy Joe Saunders' billion-dollar fight? Who's Daniel Dubois' billion-dollar
fight? But here's the thing. Ray Leonard didn't have metal plates in his face. He got laser surgery. I mean, that's much – detached retina is not as serious of a surgery. It's not the same injury, guys. It's not anything to sneeze at, but you know it's with the technology we have today, with detached retina is it's not a horrific surgery, you know and people forget that when he did suffer that detached retina he was away from the sport for three and a half years.
That's a big difference, right? That's a huge difference.
And at the time he suffered that, we didn't have the technology that, you know, where it could be repaired to the level it was.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's, there's no reason, like I said, man, there's no real reason for him to come back. Now, as far as Daniel Dubois goes, look, man, this guy is a very limited fighter. We saw that in the Joyce fight. I mean, this guy was knocking out everybody until he ran into Joe Joyce. And this guy, man, you see that he's so limited in what he can do. I think the eye injury hinders him even more. You know, and he may come back and he may, you know, they got good matchmaking over there. So he may come back and he may win a title against a fringe titleist or whatever. But any big fight he's in, he's done. I really believe it. I really believe he's not going to be the same.
He's got a lot of questions to answer, and I don't think he's going to answer these questions overnight.
Your confidence alone, right?
It's going to be. I mean, that guy, what's he fighting, Dinu or whatever that guy's name is? That guy may not be that. That's one guy, but what happens if he runs into another Joe Joyce again? That's what we're going to have to.
Well, we got the pattern. We got the blueprint on how to beat the guy. I mean, you know, it's a pretty simple blueprint, you know. So, but you got to have the right guys to follow that blueprint.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
You know,
can he be champion? Who knows? Even what's his name there? Frank Warren, when asked about it, he said, "Well, only time will tell. We'll have to see."
Yeah. So. Yeah. What are you going to do, man? What were you – now, you had talked about – you had talked to me earlier about this, about the Tyson Fury thing, about some money or whatever. That, what is the – because you've been following the story closer than anybody I know. And Eddie Hearn says that the fight's going to happen. He came out today and said it'll be August – or the other day said it'll be August 14th. I know you've been watching this like a hawk. So explain to us now what the holdup is. You know, if Eddie Hearn announces it yet again, what is the holdup on this?
Well, these were the quotes that I took out of an interview that I heard this morning. He did two interviews, one with Boxing Social, one with IFL TV, and he said the financial documents are taking longer than usual to be provided.
That's not a normal thing.
So when you say something's taking longer than usual, that's kind of an issue, right? That's not something you sweep under the rug. And an issue that is with, you know, an issue that is the financial, when if the issue is financial, if it's a financial situation that there's a problem with, right? If there's a hold up with the funds, that's not a little issue. Like without any money, the money's not there. You can't have the fight. So this is some information I got. Someone said, he said, let me just feel like I can find this information. Someone told me the other day. So said, the Saudi Sports Commission refused to fund the Fury Joshua fight due to economic difficulties and COVID. This forced Hearn to seek private investors who could, you know, who could be very shady. That's for the person put in the description. These aren't my words. Said Aram has had deals fall through to scams in the Middle East. Furthermore,